I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, we'll start the show with an exclusive about the misguided priorities of public schools in our state at a time of declining enrollment. Plus,
listen, you can have a request, but I have the right to walk freely on my own campus.
And we have the right to say no to your request.
Plus, Bob Ferguson finally speaks out about the anti-Semitism on the campus of his alma mater, but his advice is, as expected, completely worthless. And a California sheriff's timely warning to the citizens of Washington State. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. You know, with everything going on in our education system, common sense people know what needs to be done in order to stop the declining enrollment, as an example. We know that that has been steadily declining in our public schools in Washington State since, I think, in earnest, the pandemic, although it's been slowly increasing over time. But the pandemic did a couple things to Washington families. One, parents got to see what their kids were actually being taught in our public school system because it was happening on their kitchen tables in front of them. And we had so many parents who were like, wait, what's going on? As they listened to lessons that were happening for their kids. So that was sort of a wake-up call to a lot of parents. Some parents realized, hey, I can do this. I can manage this. I can teach my kids. I had to do it during the pandemic when Governor Inslee kept them out of school for so long. So that was going on. And then slowly into our school system, particularly over the past 5 years, there's been this prioritization of DEI, this prioritization of politicizing things for kids that are young, this politicizing, you know, even for elementary school kids, that's happening in classrooms, and also this social agenda and the extreme gender ideology. And for some parents, they're like, no, I want my kid to go to school and learn. And if they're not going to go to school and learn, then I don't want my kid to be in the public school system. So if you're the state of Washington and you understand that enrollment is critical to, well, if you only care about money, critical to money, to keeping those revenues coming in, critical to making sure that the members of the most powerful union in the state of Washington, the Washington Education Association, that they get to keep their jobs, they get to keep money in, what would you want to do? Well, you'd want to make sure that you're fixing the reasons why parents are sending their kids to public school at lower rates, right? I mean, that's what I would do if I really cared about, as the state pretends to care, about declining enrollment. You certainly wouldn't double down on the reasons that parents are taking their kids out of school, right? You certainly wouldn't double down on the social agenda, the political agenda, the gender ideology, the DEI. Of course not. Well, if you had common sense, you wouldn't. But of course, the state of Washington does not have common sense. And we're starting the show today with an exclusive story because we got an email from a parent in the North Shore School District. I want to read the email. The parent, I don't believe, wants to use their name or anything. Maybe we can convince them to speak out about it, but we appreciate the tip. The parent tells us, we live in the North Shore School District, and the district is faced with a huge budget deficit. And this district has cut programs like elementary sports, elementary music, special ed paraeducators, assistant principals, etc. It's been distressing to lose these programs available for my child. They keep their terrible admins making $250,000 a year plus. And now they are hiring amid all this, the deficits, the cuts to education for kids and special ed. Well, get this, the parent says. They're now hiring an educational justice director during massive budget cuts. An educational justice director. So Nicole got that email. She's like, what does that mean? Well, it's a DEI job. I'm not going to tell you how much it pays yet, because I'm going to leave that little piece de resistance for the end of the segment to really rile you up. But I thought, well, let's just look into this. And Nicole looked up the job post. Again, the North Shore School District. Executive Director of Racial and Educational Justice. Job summary. North Shore School District is seeking a talented, engaging, and compassionate diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, and social justice executive director to help us advance our vision of being an inclusive community of learners that provides an outstanding education for every individual in a diverse student population. We're looking for someone who can work effectively, independently, as well as part of a team. We need a leader who understands best practices in promoting diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, and who is passionate about enhancing the lives of our students and community. We need a leader who shares our belief that a culturally rich and inclusive school community provides students with the best possible environment for a quality education. Let's go into some of their duties, shall we? Duties and responsibilities of this particular job. And yes, I'm going to read quite a bit of this because I find it utterly fascinating. This is the list of essential functions. They note, it's not exhaustive. So yes, not even all these duties I'm about to read are everything that would be expected of this DEI director, and they may be supplemented as necessary in consultation with the employees involved. One, facilitate the district's focus on equity, diversity, and inclusion in partnership with all administrators, staff, families, and the community. Develop, track, and communicate progress on activities and strategies in support of racial justice, equity, inclusion, and diversity. Create and lead all our school and district trainings, events, and initiatives designed to increase diversity and inclusion at every level of the school district. Work to further our deep cultural commitment to inclusivity, educational justice, and belonging with our communities. Support the development of inclusive and equitable curricula, assessment, and pedagogical? What is that? What is a pedagogical? Nicole, Google that.
I have no idea.
Google that. Okay, somebody's going to be like, Brandy, you're so dumb. Pedagogical practices? That's number six, Nicole. Mm-hmm. Support student success through equitable and inclusive practices, policies, and procedures. Examine, adjust, and inform instructional practices by leading social justice, equity-focused professional learning that builds awareness, increases knowledge, reduces bias, and grows skills in culturally responsive instructional practices. Coach all employees through inclusion and bias situations as they come up, ultimately helping them become more effective allies. Develop and nurture a network of diversity and blah, 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 blah. What is, did you look it up, Nicole?
Yeah, it just means teaching from a plan.
Okay, somebody probably knew lesson that. Plan. Was a, mm-hmm. I don't know, I saw a PETA well, to start teachers. It with and I thought, wait, what? This is the word soup of wokeness.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely insane. Work with HR and recruiting team to ensure diversity strategies are fully embedded in all recruiting processes. All right, so that's the job. Again, the job title, Executive Director of Racial and Educational Justice in the North Shore School District, a district that has been facing budget deficits for several years now. What do you think that job pays in a school? I mean, they have budget deficits, right? So you can't pay this job very much. Certainly, it's not a critical job to the education of kids where there's already budget deficits. $234,186 would be the minimum. The minimum.
Unreal.
The maximum, $246,042 a year. And Nicole was looking up what even school superintendents across the state make. This is more than most school superintendents.
Oh, yeah.
Make.
More than the majority. I mean, most superintendents are in the mid 100s.
Yeah. $250,000 to be their diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, and social justice executive director. What a mouthful.
The reason it is they decided that was the executive/director pay range mm-hmm. for their district. So this job didn't have to be a director.
It
you could probably just make it an
and director in the
it's
name.
It's just where they place the position.
Right. Yeah, it's a pay band, and that's mm-hmm. common in government, but that mm-hmm. is quite the hefty pay band. I want to say that's very similar to what the mayor of Seattle and the police chief of Seattle make in a massive city. Mm-hmm. And North Shore's Berrien, right?
Yeah,
Siberian.
Yeah.
And I just want to remind you of this comes after all these headlines. And I can understand why this parent was so incredibly frustrated with having a child in the district, all these cuts to not only programs they enjoy, but things arguably they need in order to have a quality education. And then at the same time, this massive executive director role that's just about DEI making $250,000 a year.
Sorry, I think it's Bothell.
Bothell.
Bill.
It was a B.
Mm-hmm.
B. Yep. Bothell. Berrien. Big difference, but yes, Bothell. So I just want to remind you, 2024, this was a headline in March, mid-March. facing a $26 million budget shortfall, North Shore District plans to cut fifth grade music. It says the district decided to cut fifth grade music that has been around for over 40 years. And that comes after the fourth grade program had already been cut because of $26 million budget deficit. Rewind to last year, 2023, about the same time. This from Cairo 7. Emotions high as North Shore School District, the latest to face financial crisis. It says the North Shore School District, latest to be making cuts, because this has happened to a lot of school districts. The district has projected a $21 million shortfall and is planning to slash about 5% of its total budget. Officials say the district plans to cut at least 6 administrative jobs for the next school year. And heck, if that's where you're going to cut it, cut the administrative jobs. We know a lot of these districts, they've just got all this bloat up top. And they're cutting other things. But fifth grade band? Eh. Why teach kids wind instruments when you can teach them to be racists? Apparently that's because that's what DEI is. DEI is just teaching kids to be racist, or teaching white kids to be guilty, and teaching kids of color to be victims for the rest of their lives. And now you've got this executive director role making $250,000 a year that's going to not only make sure that the white kids are being taught to be guilty, that the kids of color are being taught to be victims, but that the teacher and staff are taught the same. And that the HR department is making sure that it's hiring people who are going to be willing to come into the school district as white people and feel guilty, and as employees of color, then feel entitled. And they're going to do all of that with $250,000 while our school system is utterly failing. Across the state, we know that test scores are very low in the basics. Math, reading. I was going to say arithmetic, but that's math. Math, reading, right. English language.
Writing.
Yes, writing.
Even though it's not
I promise I didn't go to a Washington State public school. I went to a very good public school in the Midwest, but you know, I digress. It's wild stuff. And again, it's as if they, and this is not unique to the North Shore School District. I've said before, you give me a budget. You give me the city of Seattle's budget. You give me King County's budget. Because Seattle's, we're facing budget deficits. King County, we're facing severe budget deficits. If you don't let us tax you more, then we're going to have to take away all these things you really, really need. State of Washington, give me their budget and give me one day and I will save billions of dollars by simply cutting out any job, any department, any directive that has DEI in it. Billions of dollars. So if I was a parent in the North Shore School District, I would be livid. Livid. That you're showing up at meetings and all of this, and you're trying to talk about, don't cut this for my kids. My kid enjoys band. This is something that supplements their learning and their creativity. You know, don't cut paraeducators. They're really important. And then they're, at the same time, probably didn't come up at the meetings, I imagine, that at the same time they're going to spend $500,000 or $250,000 a year. Rather, on someone to teach DEI principles and policies. That's the other thing, really quick. It's a racist. It is, and I've said this all along about Governor Inslee and all these DEI initiatives that they push, and Bruce Harrell in Seattle, who's like, we got all these empty storefronts, let's fill them with only black business owners first. It is, when you have elected leaders, in Washington State in particular, one of the most progressive states in the nation, yet we have some of the most like anti-racist policies. You think the people of our state are racist. That's what that says to me. Is that in the North Shore School District, you think your teachers aren't capable of treating everyone in a welcoming, what was the word they used? Belonging, a sense of belonging. You're not capable of treating kids of every color the same, like they belong and that they're safe and that they're welcome. So we need to hire someone at $250,000 a year to make sure you're doing that. That tells me that you have a very low opinion of your teachers and staff. Same at the state level, county level, whatever it is. When you have to push those initiatives and push the DEI training on all your state employees where they've got 6 hours of training that they have to go to learn not to be racist. First of all, you can't teach someone not to be a racist. It's impossible. If they're a racist, they're a racist. You can't DEI train your way out of that. So you just have to, if you find out that you've got a racist working for you and they've done racist things and said racist things, then you give them the boot. But you have a lot of very good human beings in the state of Washington, in state jobs, in public schools. And by shoving this stuff onto them, and making it like the top priority in our public school system, you're basically saying that we have a bunch of racists in the state of Washington, a bunch of racist teachers, a bunch of racist employees, and if we don't do this, then you're going to be spreading your little racism all over the place. And that's just insane. I think more highly of the people in the state of Washington. I do happen to think that we're a very welcoming, inclusive, loving populace of people. And as such, I think we can go away and cut all the DEI stuff away and save a little bit of money and spend it on things that really, really matter. Insane. So yeah, we'll follow up with that parent. And Nicole, you have reached out to the North Shore School District.
I did.
To ask them, help why? Us. Help
why?
Us. Why? It was just Nicole's, all her email said is, hi, this is Nicole with the Undivided Podcast. Why? Thank you. And yeah, so we'll let you know if they get back to us. And I hope they do, because there are some parents. This isn't some manufactured outrage from us. Hey, if I want to manufacture outrage, I can. But it's from at least this parent who's willing to speak up and say, this genuinely bothers me. It bothers me too.
Just a little side note, which I also asked them about, but they mentioned in there that they'll be supervising racial and social or school justice, whatever, department. So are they going to create a department?
Or is there already a whole department?
I don't think there's already a department. I'm going to guess they're creating it. They're going to let this person hire an assistant, para, whatever, to help with whatever. So I'm sure it doesn't stop at their salary.
Yeah. So that's a good question. Assuming you already asked. Is it a whole department? Now you're going to have a whole DEI department like all these other government agencies do. And then they're going to get in there and they're just going to come up with things. They're going to come up with things to do because they're bored. They're like, okay, you know, like,
well, I mean,
we're tasked with DEI, right? So let's do what
the
Olympia School District does. Let's have these little meetings for only kids of color and tell the white kids that they can't come because they're dangerous. And then it's just going to create all this division. And as most DEI initiatives do, we're going to be worse off on the back end than we are on the front end, because you're going to tell all of them that they're racist or all of them that they're victims. And then they're going to move forth believing that, and you haven't made anything better. So that's government in a nutshell. Mm-hmm. All right. Coming up next, people really don't know what to do with these migrants. Imagine that. People really don't know what to do with the migrants that are flooding into the country at record levels. And Washington State is no exception. And right now, they're just kind of playing whack-a-mole with migrant encampments that are popping up. And I don't think it's good for anyone. We'll discuss that. First, I have urged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. Every single one of you needs insurance. I hope you have insurance where you are legally obligated to have it. But for some of you, like me, for a long time, I was taking care of it on my own. I was shopping the big box stores. I was looking at the billboard slogans and like, oh, I could save X amount of money in X amount of time. That sounds really convenient. And then I took the First Mark Challenge and realized that not only were Mike and I woefully underinsured, but we were paying more than we needed to. And we even had stuff we were paying for that we didn't need at all. And that's what First Mark is going to help you get to the bottom of. You take the First Mark Challenge, you talk to them about your current insurance, and then they go out, they shop all the carriers they have at their disposal. They find you the best insurance for what you actually need at the best price, and they present that to you, and you can decide, do you want to be a member of the First Mark family or not? I don't know why you wouldn't, because there's no cost of admission and you never pay First Mark a dime. And I've heard so many good things from so many Undivided viewers. This is Casey in Covington. I want to thank you for telling us to check out First Mark Insurance. I did the First Mark Challenge a couple weeks ago after receiving a ridiculous renewal statement for my insurance. We made the switch to policies with First Mark and walked away with slightly better homeowners insurance for the same price, nearly down to the dollar. And they managed to save us 37% off our auto quote. Right now, every dollar counts. Happy to join the First Mark family. And also the Undivided Podcast, now officially members of the First Mark family. So not only am I personally covered, but I'm professionally covered as well. Come get me, Seattle lefties. I don't know. I shouldn't goad them into suing me over something. But you know what I mean. All right, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. All right, so there's been this whole drama with these migrants in Seattle and South King County, and where should they go? A church was like, oh, come here. And then the neighborhood was mad because they put them out in the lawn on tents, and there was increased crime, increased issues, calls for service. When you already have stretched resources for the homeless that were already in our neighborhoods and in our communities and dealing with that, now you've got a bunch of homeless migrants from all over the place. And you might recall, I think it was a couple weeks ago, we talked about it on the show, where migrants set up an encampment at a Seattle city park. Most of them are from the Democratic People's Republic of Congo. And so they've been sort of in this weird, and I don't feel bad for them per se. I mean, on an individual basis, if you have migrants within the influx that truly have legitimate asylum claims and they're fleeing horrific situations, I do feel bad for them because that's what this country is for. If they've gone through the process appropriately, by all means, come. We should be wrapping our arms around them, making sure that they are taken care of and that they can proceed throughout that process. And I feel bad for them, especially so considering you've had millions of quote unquote asylum seekers who have no legitimate claims to asylum, who are backing up the system, who are taking the taxpayer money that's supposed to be going to people who actually need the help. And you have, I'm sure, some legitimate asylum seekers that are caught in the mix. I don't know if all these people are legitimate asylum seekers. Haven't met them, haven't talked to them, haven't read their case file, so to speak. But they are caught in the middle of complete government incompetence and dysfunction. So this is from Como News. Some migrants living in Seattle City Park are moving back to a hotel in Kent. A little over a week after setting up an encampment in a city park, a group of migrants are being moved back to a Kent hotel Monday afternoon. And they've been all over the place. The mayor's spokesperson, Krissa Braxton, told Como News, city parks are not intended to serve as makeshift shelters, lacking needed sanitation, security, and other safety-related amenities for those purposes. Camping in the park is not an appropriate, safe, or healthy shelter option for anyone, nor are its impacts acceptable for parkgoers and neighbors. And I do agree with that. They don't belong in the park. They don't belong in the park. Now, I feel bad for the city of Kent that, again, it's sort of, what is the word I'm looking for? It's like, you take them, you take them, you take them, you take them. Shuffling. Yeah, they're just being shuffled around. Mm-hmm. I mean, do we expect any different, though? That's what's happened with our homeless.
Right.
They're just shuffled around. A lot of them, it's because they won't accept services. And so it's like, all right, well, you can't stay here. And then they just go somewhere else into another neighborhood and create a problem all over the place. So did we really believe that the migrant crisis was going to be any different? And I think one of the frustrations here, which is an obvious one for those of us with common sense, is Seattle's welcomed this. Washington State has welcomed this. Seattle's a sanctuary city. The state is a sanctuary state. Of course, we're going to have migrants who are coming here. And you haven't, like, said stop. You haven't said to the Biden administration, hey, we got to lock this up. Our cities can't afford this. We can't have migrants sleeping in our parks. You know, we already have a bunch of homeless people we can't take care of. So I just fail to feel bad for city government or, frankly, taxpayers, because taxpayers are voters, and voters in Washington State have also supported this through the people they choose to put into office. And heck, if they don't want it to be a sanctuary state, then you got to put someone else in office who's going to say no more. But why would you not, at this point, even if it's an about face for you, why would you not change your mind? Why would you not? Because it's not humane. It's not empathetic to have these migrants who are going from a city park, tenting there, into a hotel, being moved to a church. If you're a progressive mayor of Seattle or the governor, are those the conditions? Like, when we say we're a sanctuary for migrants, is that a sanctuary? Is that what you intended when you wanted to be a sanctuary state? Is, yeah, bring migrants here and we'll make them live in filth and squalor in our parks. If that's not what you intended, which I sure hope it isn't, then I feel like you ought to reach out to your friend Joe Biden and the administration and say, hey, you got to help us here. And it starts with stopping the flow so we can figure out how do we care for the migrants who are already here, and then how can we improve the system so if they have legitimate asylum claims, then we can move forth and do this the right way. But they're not saying that because it's ideology. They're so terrified to admit, like, hey, we really asked for this and we were wrong and we can't handle it. And now you've got these people from the Democratic Republic of Congo just A to B, A to B, A to B. Insane. All right. And I just want to note, we can sneak the Denver thing in, right? Because this is the eventual course of things. And I've preached on the show a lot, and this could get into a much deeper conversation about, you know, the government's testing our limits of compliance. Bottom line. That's what the pandemic was all about. And we talked on the show the other day with Dr. Naomi Wolf, who wrote a book in 2007 about the global war on terror and how it kind of tested Americans' willingness to give up certain liberties and their willingness to comply with the government if things got so bad. So it started in 2007 with the erosion of our liberties that we were freely giving up because of the global war on terror and this big, you know, bad wolf. And it was scary that people were like, okay, yeah, I'll do what you want to do. And then you fast forward to the pandemic, the government scared people out of their minds. And so people complied with some really insane stuff. I mean, staying locked down in their homes, you know, willingly letting their kids stay out of school and not pushing back against that. I mean, not saying goodbye to loved ones who were on their deathbeds because the government told them they couldn't, and saying goodbye over the phone. I mean, crazy stuff. Insane levels of liberty that Americans were willing to sacrifice because things get so bad. So in Denver, it becomes just the latest place to ask, right now it's a request, the citizens there, if they would be willing to give spare rooms or spare spaces to migrants.
Now, if you're interested in learning more about hosting a migrant family, all you got to do is take out your phone, dial 211. It's as easy as that. You're going to be asked a few questions, things along the lines of how long are you able to host somebody? What kind of space are you available to provide? And Kettering says you can expect that phone call to last about 20 minutes.
Well, how long before you can expect that to be a demand from the government and not a request from the government? Hey, our Constitution only protects against the ordering of quartering soldiers. Doesn't say that the government can't force you to take migrants into your home. They've been testing your levels and your willingness of obedience and compliance for a long time now. And it's been shocking how many of our rights and liberties we're willing to just hand off to the government out of fear. So if this gets so, so bad, where, I mean, I would argue it's already at crisis levels, how long before the government says, hey, they'll comply or we'll make them comply? That terrifies me. And all this stuff in recent years, I realize I sound like a total conspiracy theorist, but how many things have been conspiracies in the last 5 years that were just legitimately true? So I am to the point where I will not rule anything out. Because then I'll sound stupid 3 years from now when I've got a group of, you know, migrants from Mexico in our spare bedroom because the government made me put them there. So anyway, just wild stuff. But that won't happen to me. You know why, Nicole?
Why is that?
Because I will be living my best life out at Natchez RV Resort.
I'm good at this.
Well done.
I know. But I mean, okay, let's just be serious about this for a second. I know this is a sponsor and stuff, but when I was in my like teens and even 20s and 30s, and I'm still in my 30s, but I'm now like reaching functioning adulthood. You have all these like dreams and goals and big things you want to do with your life and career-wise and traveling. The older I get, and it's especially true in the last couple years, I just care about hanging out with my husband, like building meaningful memories, being left alone, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, really just having a quality, down-to-earth life.
Yes, I absolutely wanted to be a city girl. I grew up in the boonies. I wanted to be a city girl. I wanted to do all this stuff. Now I'm like, get me out of here.
Yeah, and now, I mean, I don't want to go to bars. I don't want to mingle with people. Not to say I wouldn't mingle with you guys, but the things that used to matter, I promise I'm getting into this ad read, but I was thinking of this morning. The things that used to matter to me just don't, they seem so frivolous and unimportant now. And I'm like, I'm thinking about all this stuff. I'm thinking about how when I leave the podcast, I want to just have a doggy rescue and I want to hang out with dogs and fish and hang out with my husband. It's like your goals and your ambitions and what's important to you really changes. And so when, I mean, we added Natchez RV Resort as a sponsor, but when I was looking at some of the photos that they had on their website of what that place is like, where that's what it is. It's like a little haven away from the craziness where it's just like, I mean, they've got like golf and hunting and fishing and you can hang out with your dogs there and they've got all sorts of trails and all of this stuff. And it just is like, that's it. That's it for me. So anyway, it's the grand opening of Natchez RV Resort Phase 2 happening May 18th and 19th. We spoke to Tig, who's with Natchez RV Resort, about the kind of folks who are buying over there in their first round.
It's an awesome group of people. I can't say better things. It's all very like-minded people. I'm sure a lot of them listen to your show. A lot of people still living and working over here in the greater Seattle area that just want that home base to go to, and they want quality. They want to keep it a resort and not just have it be a park. And it's very tough these days with RVers for them to find a place to go, especially a quality spot. This is one they own. They can treat it like a second home, have their big RV sitting over there. If they get off work on a Friday and feel like just shooting over there, they know it's an option. They can also, when they're not using the lot, we have a great rental program where we can put it into the rental pool and they can rent it back out or weekend to the general public and have them bring some money coming in for them when they're not using it.
Yeah, and it's right outside of Sela there, and so it's just a beautiful area of the state. So the Phase 2 grand opening weekend features 21 extra-large RV lots complete with water, power, sewer, grand opening pricing starting at only $79.9, 300 days of sunshine over there. Did I mention all the wine tasting that's nearby? 4,300-square-foot clubhouse, gourmet kitchen, great room, fitness center, showers, laundry. They're just getting started on the pool, which is going to be awesome as well. So Natchez RV Resort Phase 1 sold out quickly. Make sure to reserve your showing for the grand opening weekend, May 18th and 19th, with grand opening pricing on Phase 2. Again, 21 extra large lots from just $79.9. Reservations fill up fast, so reserve now, 800-422-6009, 800-422-6009, NatchezRVResort.com. All right, we had an exceptional interview on Sundays with subscribers this past week. I just had to play a clip for you. And the way we got him on the show was kind of weird. So I got home one day, and Mike was sitting on the couch, and he was death scrolling on Facebook videos. And a video popped up of a California sheriff down in Riverside County, California, who is giving a press conference about the insane crime crisis in California. Here's a clip.
We are here today because California public safety is in crisis. Crime is steadily on the rise, and our public safety policy is one of the worst, if not the worst, in the nation. I want to make this clear, and I want there to be no mistake in what I am saying. This is not by accident. The driving force in our crisis is a radical, progressive agenda fraudulently called criminal justice reform. This is nothing short of a sick and twisted social experiment where law enforcement is the bad guy and criminals are somehow victims of society and not responsible for their actions, their crimes, or accountable to their countless victims.
Yeah, so I was listening to that and I go, who is that, babe? I was like, I got to get him on the show. So that is Riverside County, California Sheriff Chad Bianco. Nicole reached out. We got him on Sundays with subscribers. And what I really found, I'll play a clip of the interview here. What I really found is that what he had to say seemed like a warning to people in Washington State that California is maybe a year or two ahead of us in some areas on the depths of the crime crisis, the homelessness, the drug abuse. And he so perfectly illustrates, you know, how they got into that position. And also what he said there, which I asked him about, which was, you know, somebody did this intentionally. Here's a clip. You said that this is not by accident where mm-hmm. we've come. So do you believe that all of this was done in an effort to move the state toward lawlessness? Or do you think it was done with good intentions and it just didn't have the desired effect?
No, I honestly do believe it. Now, I have to be careful because you certainly, and especially in today's day and age, you just get labeled as a conspiracy theorist and then, you know, one of those, you know, the tinfoil hat type people. But I have been in this job for 31 years and my entire existence, my entire adult life is about facts. It is about evidence. It is about fact. Is it about truth? There's no emotion that goes into my job. My job is void of emotion. We are about taking care of business, protecting people, and we deal with nothing but fact. So with that, we look for evidence. We look back and see what brought someone to a certain point. So I do the same thing with everything else. And if you do that with politics of where we are today, you have to go back and see the natural progression of things that they did. And even up until the point where we are now being, our southern border is being invaded by who knows who, terrorists, people from all kinds of different countries, predominantly a single male phenomenon and all these people that are coming across the border. But you go back to when this was designed. And back in 2012, when they decided they were going to close prisons, they were going to do away with their responsibility to house state prison inmates and make it a county's responsibility. Well, what that did is it forced a disaster onto counties. So now counties were automatically overwhelmed. Their jails were filled instantly to where we have to release prisoners. We can't keep the people in jail that we want to keep in jail. The state prison system is no longer helping. That was AB 109. Then comes Prop 47 and Prop 57 that reclassify all these crimes back to misdemeanors or make misdemeanors non-crimes anymore. And as you progress, they tout their success. So they've made all of these things that used to be crimes no longer crimes. But then 2 or 3 years later, they say, look, we're reducing crime. the statistics show and prove that we're reducing crime. Well, nothing's a crime anymore. Of course, crime is going to go down. And so all of these things happen. And then more recently, 2017, they pass, they make us a sanctuary state law. And they pass that to make it a crime for law enforcement to even consider participating or helping the federal government with ICE or with Border Patrol or any of those entities. And it's really a crime for me to ask someone if they are in this country illegally. So when you bring that to right now and you see what's happening, where the federal government is actually funding the NGOs that are bringing all of these people into the country, they're going to these states that have made it legal for them to come here. You can't do anything about it. We all have the same problems with rising crime, with drug use, with homelessness, and now we're being inundated with the 15 million illegals that are coming across the border. These are all educated people that have made these laws and passed these laws and taken us down this direction. We were sounding these alarms in 2011 when AB 109 was being passed. Everything came to fruition. Everything we have been saying over the years is proving true. They can't claim they didn't know. They can't claim it was an unintended consequence. It is exactly the consequence that they were hoping for. They are hoping for an anarchy type of a system where people are no longer safe. They no longer feel safe. They no longer trust their local law enforcement to keep them safe. They need help. They want help. It's all by design to create this massive problem that people are just going to be so afraid and so fed up, they're going to beg the government for help. Then the government gets to get bigger and come in and help and say, look, you have a horrible problem. It doesn't matter that we caused it. Here's the solution. The reality is we need you to just go back a few years, fix all of these horrible laws that they passed, these policies and these mandates and these regulations that have put us in this position, and just remove them.
Yeah. Amen. Oh my God, I love this guy. So Sheriff Chad Bianco, Riverside County, California. We loved having him on the show. You can watch our full interview Sundays with subscribers by becoming a subscriber, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Also on Sunday's show, we had Democratic State Representative Mari Levitt, who is a member of the Fur Caucus in Olympia, where they fight to like increase penalties for people who hurt animals. We had her on in response to a story we did about a guy who shot a dog in the head in Seattle for absolutely no reason and is going to get a slap on the wrist. So it was a great episode. But Chad Bianco, there was rumors he's going to run for governor of California in 2026 when Gavin Newsom is gone. And I asked him about those in the interview, and he basically, I mean, he didn't say he wasn't going to, but he's trying to weigh, you know, how likely is it that he could be successful and all of that. But as far as a sheriff goes, we could have, oh my gosh, guys, we could have a former sheriff in Washington State as the governor, and then you could get a sheriff in California as a governor. And you could just really start to fix the West Coast. And if the West Coast starts to ease up on the crazy, then the rest of the country will stop in its tracks. I think that sounds great to me. Yeah, he was great. Just love it. So that's so random how some of these interviews come up. One of my favorite interviews, and it was because Mike was listening to a little clip on the couch on Facebook. All right, we have a new partnership we're announcing today. So one of the things we've been trying to do with the show is we've been trying to partner up with people, organizations, have frequent guests that are, you know, carving out common sense insanity in their own little areas of the world. We've done that with Future 42, which we do a segment with every Monday, and they're really trying to restore common sense insanity on taxation, on crime, and just trying to get people to think critically about these things, because you can't do it on a silo. And that's why I always preach to you guys that, you know, as much as, you know, we've got a pretty good sized audience, but the really important thing is for you to go out in your individual lives and your families and your friends and your voting patterns and push for common sense and push for sanity on whatever issue is important to you. I think of Alicia Perkins down in Olympia, Olympia School District parent, who she decided that her push for common sense was going to be about improving the education system and about bringing awareness to some of the crazy things that are happening. These things make a difference. So we want to make sure that we're giving a platform and pushing people who are engaged in fighting for common sense, Team Sanity. So we're going to start a weekly partnership for a while with the Rental Housing Association of Washington, and how they came on our radar is obviously these crazy landlord-tenant things are going on that are just out of control. Absolutely out of control. We have been covering what's happening in Bellevue with a squatter who's been in a house there for like 2 years and they can't get him out. So they're protesting him. And then when we became interested in these issues was through the Jason Roth ordeal. So Jason Roth, young guy, fixed up a house, bought a house, fixed it up at a young age in South Seattle, only to get a deadbeat tenant who wouldn't get out of there for a year. And then about a month ago, finally, Jason Roth's ordeal came to an end. King County came in, evicted this guy from his house. And we had Jason Roth on at the time. And I asked him, I said, Jason, what happened? You know, last time we talked to you, there was no end in sight to this ordeal. And now you're calling us today saying the guy just got evicted. And here's what Jason had to say.
So I joined Rental Housing Association, and that was the big change of all this, where things started looking up. I became a RHA member. I didn't even know they existed until somewhat recently. They helped me find a lawyer that was better suited for my situation. They gave me a lot of good advice. And some of that was sort of like, you know, stay on the down low for a little while until this is over. And the lawyer that they were able to find me, who they recommended, was awesome. And he came up with a settlement that they agreed to. Which is part of the reason, like, the eviction actually happened. It made us so we didn't have to go to court.
Yeah, so Jason was so excited, and he said multiple times in that interview, I just wish I had known about RHA sooner. And he recommended that other small landlords join RHA. I think it's like a $260 yearly fee. And you see how beneficial it was to Jason Roth. So we're going to start a weekly segment on Tuesdays where we're looking into specifically issues related to what's happening with these landlord laws and the tenant protections. But I want to introduce you today to Sean Flynn. So Sean Flynn is the executive director and board president of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. And I wanted him to just help us understand what it is that they're out there trying to do for mom and pop landlords, and why this issue has become such a culture war issue, but has become something that's getting so much attention. Sean Flynn, welcome to Undivided.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're excited about this because we've been trying to partner with people who are looking at things through lens of common sense and sanity and like, hey, that makes sense and that doesn't. And there are a lot of us out there, including you guys at RHA, and we just need to make sure that people hear what's going on and know how they can push back or take action. So talk a little bit about what the RHA does.
So the Rental Housing Association of Washington, what we do is we advocate and provide services for small independent housing providers, often referred to as landlords, but we like the term housing provider. Because what we fundamentally do is we don't lord over anyone. We provide housing with our hard-earned savings. So our members are typically what is often referred to as the mom and pops. So our typical member owns maybe a single family home or a duplex or maybe two single family homes, right? And they're oftentimes that person's retirement or their kids' college education fund is sitting in those homes. So they're hardworking Washingtonians who have decided to use their investment dollars to provide housing as part of their investment plan. And so what RHA is really there to do is to provide the services and resources to allow small mom and pops to stay in the business.
Yeah. Well, we first heard about RHA, because I'll just be honest. I mean, gosh, going back maybe 6 months, I wasn't really familiar. I'd maybe heard about Rental Housing Association, but we heard about it, you guys, from Jason Roth. So you'll be familiar with that story, which was one of the first big stories, I think, of this crazy, you know, landscape gone wild for landlord tenants. And, you know, he'd been dealing with for about a year a guy who, I just call it squatting, because when you're not paying rent for that long, I mean, you're just kind of squatting there. And man, I'll tell you, I talked to him so many times and off the record, on the show, off the show. And he was just beside himself with what to do. Had you know, exhausted his resources and his knowledge. And then one day, all of a sudden, out of the blue, it's fixed. He's like, yeah, the guy got hit and he's out. And he said it was RHA. He said, if I had not joined RHA, I would still be in this mess. Are you hearing from a lot of stories like Jason's?
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. the maze has gotten substantially more complicated for housing providers. And once you find yourself in a tough position, it is harder to get out. The eviction timelines continue to get longer and longer. Last I checked, we're a year out from a start to finish on an unlawful detainer in King County. And what we've seen again and again is when a small housing provider has a problem and they can't get the tenant out, or the cost is really, really high for if you've broken a rule of some sort, that housing provider at the end of it says, I don't want to do this anymore, and they sell the unit. And those units don't go back into the rental pool. They're purchased by owner-occupied, or they become townhomes that become owner-occupied or whatever. And, you know, what that does is that reduces the total amount of rental housing available, which makes it more expensive, exactly at a point of time where we don't have enough affordable housing to begin with.
So we're going to be talking to you guys every week. And I think now is particularly important to draw attention to these issues and these individual stories, because I do feel like there's momentum. I mean, do you get that sense that this is finally getting to the point of absurdity where now people are going to pay attention to what you guys have been saying?
I mean, we're hoping. Yeah, we're hoping that common sense prevails in 2025 in the legislature. You know, we've already seen some of the more liberal jurisdictions of the state move into more moderate to more modern voices. And you see that in the Seattle City Council. It's a more moderate voice than it has been in the past. I know that it's relative, right? Because it was so far left for so long. but RHA works really hard. We have a robust government relations part of our organization that we try to talk to as many electeds as possible. And we do that through PAC donations and other things. Mm. But we're really hoping that reasonable folks can look at these problems and come up with solutions that actually work, rather than dogmatic solutions that we know don't work, but play well to a populist politic at a given moment.
Yeah, well, 100%. And we want to be part of that. And I think also talking about these issues when they're not actively in the news is important. It's like easy to talk about them when the rent control debate's happening in Olympia or when Jason Roth's like, where am I going to live? But I think making sure that people understand how this plays into the overall housing crisis, that we're the affordability crisis and all of that is so critical. So we're excited to partner with you guys. Sean Flynn, thank you so much. And we'll talk to you again.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on. I look forward to seeing you again.
Yeah, again, that's Sean Flynn with the Rental Housing Association of Washington. So this is obviously a great partnership for us in the show, but what we hope to do through this, so every week we're going to do a segment. It's not always going to be RHA. We're going to talk to landlords that are dealing with craziness and maybe even tenants and try to figure out, you know, how do we improve the situation? Because it's wild, right? It doesn't make any sense what's happening. You cannot have an environment where someone's allowed to squat in someone's home for a year or 2 years and not pay them any rent. That's theft. We cannot have that. So how can we improve the situation? And then through bringing awareness to the Rental Housing Association, we want landlords to know that this service is available to you, that you don't have to, like Jason Roth, suffer for a year only to find out about them. And then your problem is like fixed virtually overnight. And so if you're a small landlord and you're struggling with what to do, or you're not in this mess yet, and you worry that you could find yourself in that mess, reach out to the RHA, become a member, and make sure that you have someone in your corner navigating this crazy environment while we work to fix it. So RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org, you can learn more about what they do. So we're going to fix this debacle, and we're going to make sure that there's enough pressure on lawmakers in Olympia that they don't come around next session in 2025 and try again with the rent control that just barely failed this year, because you know that they will. So we need to keep the momentum up on this issue, even when there's not a Jason Roth type story in the news. All right, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. Bob Ferguson speaks. Well, his office speaks. Bob Ferguson. I've been saying that this is his alma mater, University of Washington. Look what happened over there today. Someone, you know that big W where you go in? Somebody threw red paint all over it and said, oh, UW funds genocide. And we've seen that there have been Jewish students harassed, Jewish professors harassed. And Bob Ferguson wants to be governor. That's his alma mater. He's been pretty silent. Well, now his office is out with some advice to Jewish people who might feel harassed on campus. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. All right. And it will come as no surprise to you that this advice is utterly worthless, but we'll share it with you anyway. So just a reminder, we talked about a little bit of it on the show yesterday. There is this encampment at the University of Washington, and it's just the same old cast of characters. It's the people who protest capitalism during Occupy. It's the people who protest the police during the summer of 2020. And now they're like, wow, we found something else that we can do with our lonely, sad time. And we're going to go to the campus of the University of Washington, and we're going to tell Jewish students and professors that they are not welcome to walk freely on campus.
So then could you just like do us a favor and get out of here?
No. What are you doing here? I mean, this is a public space. People are allowed to be here as long as they obey university regulations. You guys are the ones who are not obeying regulations. You're the ones who should leave.
Listen, you can have a request, but I have the right to walk freely on my own campus.
And we have the right to say no to your request.
Yeah, I have the right to walk freely through my campus, so please, I'm not trying to touch you. I'm not.
Please let us go. Please do not physically block anyone. This is public space.
Yeah, so as the state's chief law enforcer, as the attorney general, as someone who wants to be the governor, as one of the most high-profile alums of the University of Washington, you would think that Bob Ferguson would be all over that. Just as he would if it was right-wing, neo-Nazi, and hatred. We've covered that. You'd think that he'd be coming out daily with statements saying, this is not acceptable. You cannot block the movements of Jewish students, of any professors. But particularly when you're there protesting against the right of Israel to exist. You know, you cannot, as we saw on video yesterday, rip a Israeli flag out of a student's hand and rip it to shreds and light it on fire. This isn't hard stuff to say. And it's also not hard stuff to say without giving the regular qualifier that Bob Ferguson and other Democrats give of, oh, we can't tolerate anti-Semitism or Islamophobia because they have to lump it together because they can't risk, you know, just standing up for Jewish people. They have to also say, and Islamophobia. Have you seen an instance of Islamophobia in the news on UW's campus? I haven't. I sure haven't. Interesting. So now the wonderful, timely advice from the Attorney General's office. All the credit to Ori Hoffman, our friend over at KVI, who has been all over this as a Jewish American. You know, it absolutely disgusts him. And so he followed up with the Attorney General's office. Here's his article from the Post Millennial. It says, Ferguson's spokesperson, Brianna Aho, was asked by the Ori Hoffman show if the AG's office would respond to concerns from Jewish students on UW's campus. And in response, she sent a link to a hate crimes hotline. Okay, so, you know, report it to the hate crimes hotline if you feel like you're a victim of a hate crime. Here's the caveat. The hotline doesn't go live until July of 2025. Oh, bummer. Okay. So maybe in a year, the Jewish students and that Jewish professor can call that hotline and report that they were the victim of a hate crime. Aho did not respond when asked what the students were supposed to do in the meantime, since the hotline is not active and likely won't be for over a year. And just a little bit of background on this hotline, which we've talked about on the show, which I think is completely meaningless because there's a hotline if you're the victim of a crime. It's called 911. The creation of the hotline was made law via Senate Bill 5427, which passed the Democratic-controlled State House. It read that the Attorney General's office, quote, shall oversee a hate crimes and bias incidents hotline staffed during business hours and dedicated, oh, you can only call during business hours, so God forbid, and dedicated to assisting people who have been targeted or affected by hate crimes and bias incidents. The hotline is intended to, quote, identify local service providers and culturally specific services to assist, quote, historically underserved communities and create an advisory committee with, quote, diverse and inclusive representation to provide support. A majority of Republicans opposed the bill. A 2023 version of the bill included a provision for $2,000 in compensation per person targeted or affected by a specific hate crime or bias incident. That $2,000 compensation, thank God, did not get passed as part of Senate Bill 5427. So the underlying problem here is instead of strong rebukes from the Attorney General's office, which shouldn't be an issue at all, Ori Hoffman shouldn't have to beg for it. I shouldn't have to call him out for it. This should just be expected stuff. It's very odd that he can't just do it, especially when he's on social media this week tweeting about the Holocaust. It's like, oh, maybe at the same time you take a firmer stance on what's happening in the United States and around the world right now. But maybe that's asking too much. So you're going to tell these students, call a hotline that doesn't even exist right now, not even up and running, while you simultaneously are an absolute coward over this whole thing. And even if, I'll say, even if the hotline were running, the hotline is not going to do anything. the hotline is not going to do any good. I've already said why I'm opposed to the hotline in general. One, you call 911. Hate crimes are against the law, obviously. Hate crime. It's a crime. So you call 911. Now, they wanted to use the hotline to be able to connect people to resources who didn't maybe want to file a police report or seek charges on something. Or maybe it was just a microaggression. It wasn't even a full-blown hate crime. And they just need help and resources and someone to help them through the microaggression that they suffered in America. And so I think it's a little bit worthless. But also, they're just going to use this to track people. Like, I'm sorry, somebody's going to call and say, Brandy said something, you know, racist on her podcast. Then I'm going to end up in some government database where I've been accused of a hate crime. They're going to use it to track people and all this stuff. And so I just think it's a little bit, and also what they're going to use it for. This might be the most important thing, and I'm glad I didn't forget. They're going to use it as a way to artificially inflate hate crime numbers. Because they're going to say, oh, hate crimes are up 600% in Washington state. Well, it's because they made a hate crimes hotline. And people can call the hate crimes hotline, and it doesn't mean that their case is investigated or that there's even evidence of a hate crime. They just call the hotline. So then you have the AG's office, and they're going to say, hate crimes in Washington state are up 600%. We've got to put more money to this. We've got to dedicate more resources. And then they got the DEI departments. Come on, people. Come on. Oh, my God. My tinfoil hat is showing. But it's true. Am I wrong? So anyway, yes, to the Jewish students at the University of Washington who are not being allowed to move around freely, just hold your horses, okay? Just put that in your pocket. Put that, you know, bias incident in your pocket and call the hate line in July of 2025. Easy. Easy. Thank you, Bob Ferguson. You'll make a great governor. I have encouraged you guys, if you're thinking about selling your home this year, sell with Wes. Sell with our friend Wes Jones. Gosh, I hear so many good things about him. Do we have the clip or are we going to play that another day? We'll play it another day. Wait, you do? Oh, okay. No, I was saying we just talked yesterday to a wonderful couple that just moved out of Washington State down to Florida. Lucky devils. In fact, one of them used to work for KVI, which I thought was cool. And they just gushed about their experience with Wes Jones. He does what he says he's going to do. He's in constant communication. And he's just very, very good at his job. He's been doing this in this market for a long time. And they also sold their house just back in January when interest rates were really high and they were kind of worried about it. But they ended up getting a great offer for their home over list price. They had multiple offers. They sold their home in 7 days. So they said that their fears about the market and the interest rates just weren't valid at the end of the day. Wes says he does believe at some point this year the Fed is going to drop interest rates heading into the election season. So if you're thinking about selling your home, it's best to get it ready to hit the market right now. If they drop interest rates, that's going to be a nice little rush, right?
It is. Yeah. It is. I mean, we're having a rush right now. And when rates drop, you know, assuming that they do, it's going to pick up, you know, even more. And if you want to take advantage of that, it's probably a great time to start that conversation right now. You know, whether you want to sell in the later in the spring, sometime in the summer, or even the fall. If you want to sell in 2024, you know, we're here to start a conversation with you.
Yeah. And the couple I spoke to, they had to do some cosmetic updates. And so they were able to get all of that done. And they did it kind of in the months leading up to January. And so it was a really stress-free experience for them. So that's the same thing. Like, we all get busy in the summer. We get busy around the holidays. So the sooner you can start getting your home ready to hit the market, the less stress you're going to have. And you don't want to miss the most advantageous window. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. And Wes also helped us get into this studio. Don't we just love our sponsors? Aren't they just the world's best human beings? All right, just a little bit of national news. The Stormy Daniels thing. So Stormy Daniels took the stand today in this quote-unquote hush money trial. One of the many, in case you can't keep track of all the legal problems that the former president is in right now. So I was kind of like, gosh, I don't know if I really care about this. I feel like in all this time, because remember, Stormy Daniels, that was during the 2016 presidential election cycle. This has been going on for a really, really long time. So I know there's a lot of intrigue, like, oh, porn star and all this stuff. What is she going to say? I got to be honest. I don't care. I got to be honest. I just don't care. It has been going on for so long. What could we possibly learn from this that we didn't already know? And I know there are some salacious details. There was a, is this from the New York Times, Nicole?
Yeah. I think it's from,
maybe I don't care. Yeah. I think it's from the Times. But they were like just updating what was happening on the witness stand with Stormy Daniels. And it says, It's the author Tiffany Wertheimer. Whoa, what a morning, she writes. There had been some skepticism about the importance of Stormy Daniels' testimony because she knows nothing about what's at the heart of this criminal trial, Donald Trump's financial records. Oh, how wrong they were. What we've seen this morning was an at times tense exchange between Daniels, the judge, and lawyers on both sides. Often giving very long answers, Daniels had to be told more than once to stay on topic. She was also asked to speak more slowly so the stenographer transcribing the proceedings could keep up. Wow, riveting. The judge also cracked down on prosecutors, telling one of the prosecutors to tone down questioning as to limit the explicit nature of some of the answers. Trump's lawyers objected to nearly every question from Hoffinger, the lawyer. Much of what we heard wasn't new. See, Daniels has been giving interviews before. She even wrote a book. In regards to the hush money payment, she saw it as a win-win because she didn't want her partner finding out about the alleged sexual encounter, and she would be paid. So she loved it. The money was paid late, and she signed the agreement using a fake name, Peggy Peterson. Trump has always denied having any sexual encounter with Stormy Daniels. So you get it. And again, they say what I said. The woman wrote a book. Like, she's done interviews. There's not a lot here. And I asked you guys, like, I understand the implications, right? So there's a lot of implications for not only the president, former president, but for the country, for 2024. But I'm curious how closely you guys are even following this. Are you kind of like, I'm at Trump exhaustion level to the extreme. And so I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, not only about the trial today, but I said, how closely are you following this trial or any other legal case against Trump? Very closely, somewhat, or not at all? 61% on Patreon right now are saying not at all. Not at all, except, of course, on the Undivided podcast. And when we choose to mention it, Slim McFatty says, crazies on both sides. Time for the middle majority to rise up and take things from the extremists on both sides. Kerry says, they are all a bunch of obnoxious attention whores. I think I can say whores in that context. Attention whores.
No rules here.
No rules here. Maybe that's not a good thing. Maybe it's time that we put some rules and guardrails on this show of ours. Y says, I don't watch TV or consume any news much. I don't care about it because it's the Dems' attempt at political execution. Harold Burns, we are setting some precedents that will haunt us for decades at least. I tend to think that too. Again, when one party does it, the other party turns around and does it. You saw that with impeachment. It's like, you tried to impeach Trump? Oh, you're going to go do this. Oh, yeah. And it's back and forth, and they're not doing anything for the country. Winton Dillard says, I live in Europe, and except for CNN and very little BBC, there isn't much coverage over here about Trump. Man, Winton, thanks for living in
this
Europe.
This actually was a BBC update.
BBC.
Yeah.
Thanks for living in Europe and not only still watching the show, but being a paid subscriber on Locals. We sure do appreciate you. Todd Welch says, how was Stormy Daniels not charged with blackmail? Now, my argument against Trump, he allowed himself to be blackmailed, and since you were and want to be POTUS, that makes you, in my opinion, not eligible to hold office. And I don't know if it was, they reached out to her, was my understanding, because it was after the Access Hollywood tape, yes. And that was embarrassing. And so they're like, well, we don't want a 1-2 punch. So I think Michael Cohen had approached her about just a hush money payment so I don't know that she extorted him for it.
Yeah, and she said she actually didn't care that much about the money because she was making plenty of money at the time. And so it's really confusing. It seems like she cares more about money now than she did then, apparently. But again, the money was not—it's not illegal to pay somebody to stay quiet.
Yeah, and they're saying he falsified his records to cover it up.
So that's what it's about, and it seems very hard to prove.
Well, here's the part that's hard to prove. So on my way to work today, I was listening to our friends over at Kyra Radio, which they had a bunch of layoffs yesterday. That is a whole nother topic in and of itself. And I don't listen to the morning show often with Dave Ross and Colleen O'Brien, but they had on this, they said it multiple times, this New York Times Pulitzer Prize winning reporter who was covering the trial. And I'm thinking, okay, I'll sit and listen to this for a little bit. Well, the interview was like 15, 20 minutes long. And I got to say, after 15 to 20 minutes listening to a New York Times Pulitzer Prize winning reporter explain the legal arguments against Trump, I was still confused.
Yeah.
I was still confused.
I don't think they're good. I think that's why we're so far down the line. That's why this is that's why Trump is treating it the way he is.
Right.
Because it's not really, it's just a distraction. It's just I think it's going to backfire on them.
Oh, 100%. But one of the reasons I was confused and why I think it's difficult to prove. So this reporter, and I wish I could remember his name, he was explaining how usually this would be a misdemeanor, you know, falsifying business records. But because the accusation is he falsified them to impact the outcome of an election, it becomes a felony. So I was like, well, that's interesting. But in order to prove that, how do you prove, going back 8 years to the 2016 election, that if the Stormy Daniels thing had come out without the without the hush money payment, that enough Americans would have been swayed by it that they wouldn't have. How do you prove that impacts an election? You can't. No. It's impossible to prove. So I, having listened to it, I said, well, that's how do you do that? You can't. And how are jurors expected to decide whether this should be a felony because it influenced the outcome of an election, or that was his intent to, you know? So it's really confusing to me. And so, yeah.
I understand her being there and testifying. Yeah, however, 100%. Today they said, I mean, the prosecution, I guess, was asking ridiculous questions and talking about, like, you know, I think sex is what they implied. Right. And what does that have to do with the election being interfered? So I just think that it's all a distraction. I think it's going to backfire on Dems if that's who's all behind it.
Well, it is.
And it's meant to embarrass
him. It's meant to embarrass him, right?
But it's embarrassing to us as a country. Yeah. It should be embarrassing to everyone, even those Democrats that are pushing for it and they're all excited. Because, I mean, I have friends on Facebook. Ooh, yay, like, get my popcorn out. I'm like, you're ridiculous. It's embarrassing. This
and there's
is
so
not
much stuff
something
impacting
to celebrate.
Your day-to-day life. And this is not one of them, in the sense that, I mean, I think it'll have a chilling impact on our country. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's been too long. You've tried too many times. It's like there ought to be like
let
a,
it go.
You know, because there's double jeopardy, but it's for individual. Mm-hmm. There ought to be like a, you know, three strikes on trying to get a former president incarcerated, you're out. You know, so that's just kind of how I feel about it. It's crazy. All right, we'll get to your questions and comments coming up here in a moment. But as we watch these protests unfold on college campuses across the country, I couldn't help but ask myself, do they have jobs? Are they saving money for their retirement? So we talked to Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital about that. And like, what's going on with kids these days? Are we even going to need money managers in 20 years because that generation isn't even saving any money and they're just going to live off the social safety net their whole life? Here's Zach.
Just in terms of competition, if you're a kid that knows how to work and you got a work ethic, you're guaranteed to win. I mean, you are guaranteed to win. So people are like, the American dream is dead. And I'm like, I understand why people say that. But I think because of what is going on in society, it's more alive than it's ever been, because being able to, like, if you think about like what our dads and what our grandfathers dealt with, it, like, 60 hours a week working your hands to the bone, that got you out. Like, that just puts you in the realm of everybody else, right? That was the bare necessity. I didn't guarantee anything. If you can do that with a smile on your face in this generation, you'll rule the world.
I love that. That's so true. I think it's the dad in him. He was so passionate about this topic, like making sure his kids don't wind up like that. But anyway, so if you're getting close to retirement, and heck, if you're one of these kids on the college campus and you wake up one day and realize that you're absolutely wasting your life and you want to start to get a job and invest your money so there's a future for you, then you also should do a Know Your Risk Portfolio Review with Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital. They specialize in managing your risk. There's too much going on in the country and the world right now to leave your hard-earned retirement open to too much risk. So the portfolio review, it's just a great way to kind of check that. Am I overexposed to risk? There's no obligation. Bulwark doesn't even let you invest with them at their first meeting. So you only get one retirement. Don't risk it. Schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. But what one of the things he says there with the kids, like, if you even are moderately like focused and care about doing a good job and working even remotely hard, you can rule the world. I've noticed that I am starting to appreciate more, like, when I go to a coffee shop, if the young people are actually genuinely attentive and like nice. And because I remember being in coffee shops in Seattle where you'll go and just your presence there has triggered them. Like, they are offended that you would bother them by coming in and ordering a coffee at the coffee shop you work at. And now I went to this, gosh, which one is it? So there's, I'm going to give them a shout out on the air because I just love them. Mm-hmm. At Five Stones Coffee in Kirkland, every single one of them is just the sweetest kid. Every single one of them. One day, I'm on a total tangent, but I know that you guys will feel the same way. Because now I feel like, God, I need to email someone's manager because that young person actually did their job, you know, and was actually kind about it. And the kids over at Five Stones, one day I'm in there and there was a bartell next door to it. There's not a bartell next door to it anymore. But I ordered my coffee and then I told them, like, hey, I'll be back. I'm going to bartell. And so I walk over to bartell. So I'm in the line at bartell And all of a sudden I see somebody like lurking in my side view and I'm like, that's weird. I look over and it's the barista and he's holding a coffee for me. He's like, I brought your coffee over here. I was like, stop it right now. You're warming my heart. So anyway, kids, all you have to do is just have a positive attitude and understand that, like, you know, this country, you can do well if you work hard. And Zach's right. You'll rule the world.
Absolutely.
So that's my story. Yeah. Five stones. Or as Brandy would say,
100%.
100%. I didn't realize I was doing that. 100%. All right. On the North Shore School District, our exclusive story off the top of the show, Travis Eberle says, don't forget the benefits package. And I'm sure that there's a swanky pension to go with that salary. Yeah, there was a benefits package in the, maybe you want to look and see if there's anything crazy in there. Remember they had the benefits. You want
to
pull?
Yeah, I think it just, I think it's pretty standard for each school what they've agreed to.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm sure there is. That's what you get if you work for the government here.
Yep. It doesn't matter if it's a DEI position or not. Did you like the title of my show today? DEI. Done entertaining insanity.
Loved
I support
it.
DEI because I'm done entertaining insanity. You know how hard I work to find three words that would fit with DEI? All right. ZDS. Did it say straight white men, women need not apply? Yeah. If you're white, like, sorry, you're not getting that job. It's implied. You should apply, Nicole, and see if you're given like a second round of interviews. On Sheriff Chad Bianco of Riverside County, California, who was a guest on Sundays with Subscribers this week, Greg Oleka says, to hell him running for governor, he needs to run for president. Go, Sheriff Bianco. Yeah, it's not often, I watch a lot of clips of stuff, not often that I'm stopped in my tracks by just the absolute sanity spewing out of someone, but I'm so glad. I was like, who is that, babe? Who are you watching? Mm-hmm. And he showed me the video because he turned into a great interview.
Nobody says that.
No.
It's so simple and what we're all thinking and nobody actually says
it.
It's wild.
100%. He just, it was like in my mind, I'd be thinking as he was talking about, oh, I wonder if he's going to, if this is where he's going with that. And
there
it
was.
I was like, oh, smart man. Bryce Sancheta, real estate. Brandy, I think you had a little too much Florida on your vacation over here dreaming about two common sense former sheriffs as governors in Washington and California. Let a woman dream, Bryce.
Yeah,
let a woman dream. Also, I should say hi to Alan. I ran into Alan at the grocery store nearby.
Okay.
And he was like, stop me. He's like, are you Brandy Cruz? Which always, I'm like, depends. Are you going to punch me in the face or are we cool here? Oh, he's a sweet man. It's because there's a grocery store down the street from our new studio. And yeah, so I met a friend already in the neighborhood. Anyway, migrants, Bill Biz with $20 Super Chat. I really do believe that priority needs to be given to identifying individuals and organizations that are aiding and abetting groups of illegal immigrants. Chad Bianca is spot on. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And not just the cartel, you know, sneaking them across, like, oh, let me get them across. I mean, we know that they're aiding and abetting immigrants, but encouraging them to go camp in a park, because that was a recommendation from like activists, and then activists were there, you know, remember they were assaulting Jonathan Cho, and so 100%. Mm-hmm. Charlie Knowlton, does the White House have extra rooms? I bet it does. On Bob Ferguson telling Jewish students to call a non-existent hate crime hotline if they're harassed on campus. Crafty Grandma Crispy, careful, Ferguson's office will probably stop responding to any further requests from Ari.
It appears they did.
Oh, that's,
after that.
Well, that's not the campaign. That's the office.
Right.
So Brianna has responded to us. I would hope that she would continue to respond to us in Bob Ferguson's official capacity, but his campaign has told us we are persona non grata, which doesn't surprise me. Varquar? We also need to find the funding source for the campus protests. They are too well coordinated to be random. I saw something somewhere that Bill Gates had contributed to some... let's find that for tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah, I had seen something about that, but I don't want to get too far off my skis.
And there are some that are out there, but I do think that there should be more pressure put on those people funding this.
Right.
Hate, spewing hate.
Right. Well, and also, I said on the show yesterday, I did a whole long segment about how this is... These are outside forces pushing this anti-American mind virus on kids. And somebody was saying, well, who, Brandy? Russia? China? North Korea? You don't think in the same way that they work to influence our elections and have these, you know, operations online where they're putting stuff out there that they know will pit people against each other and divide them. You don't think that they're also doing that online and essentially whether these kids obviously don't know it, but it's like, oh, they think these are fellow student activists who are organizing something on Instagram. You don't think North Korea or Russia or China are behind some of that, come on.
And they just pick somebody to trust, and then they don't do the real research behind it. They just pick somebody that they decide to trust and give all that power to, and then they just follow. Because they're just followers.
We played that clip yesterday from, do you still have it? Can we replay it?
Sure.
The girl on the college campus, I want to say it was NYU, who's sitting there holding court, like doing a sermon essentially on how absolutely wonderful North Korea is because they not only support Palestine but arm them. Do you got it?
So which side do y'all think North Korea supports, Palestine or Israel? Just guess. It is Palestine. The DPRK has actually never recognized the state of Israel. They have always upheld the right of Palestinian people to self-determination and resistance. And this is beyond moral and rhetorical support. The DPRK has actively armed and trained Palestinian resistance for decades.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is simple. All that North Korea has to do is create some little fake Instagram account, act like they're an NYU student, then put out something. Did you know that North Korea has always supported the rights of the Palestinian people? And then that just goes around and they share it with people. And then now you've got some girl sitting there in the flesh who's just been duped by an account that was run by North Korea. 100%, this is what they're doing, people. It's so easy to see, and it's sad to see these kids just being duped into it. Some of them are the professional activist type, but a lot of these students are not. And so it's social contagion driven by outside forces. On Stormy Daniels, Don A says, I can't believe we have two horrible, pitiful choices for president via the Uniparty. Shows how effed up our country really is. Yeah, but I'll tell you, one of those choices is looking less and less bad by the day. All right, speaking of pitiful and horrible choices and elected leaders, let us get to our closing sanity check, shall we? Man, Democrats can get away with a lot more than Republicans can. I've always known that, but when it comes to, you know, Republicans being painted as the party of racists, but Democrats over and over show that they have, what did our friend Dory always say from the George Bush speechwriter, soft bigotry of low expectations. This is the governor of New York, Kathy Hochul, talking about underprivileged kids.
Young black kids growing up in the Bronx who don't even know what the word computer is. They don't know. They don't know these things. And I want the world open up to all of them, because when you have their diverse voices innovating solutions through technology, then you're really addressing society's broader challenges.
Don't even know what a computer is, dum-dums. It really reminds me of this oldie but a goodie from Joe Biden.
Poor kids are just as bright and just as talented as white kids.
There you have it, today's Democratic Party. That has been your sanity check for today, and that has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Don't forget, subscribers, we have 25% off for you for the next couple weeks on our merch store. So if you want to shop the merch store with your exclusive promo code, which I gave to you on Sundays with subscribers this week, you can go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. And now's a great time to become a subscriber yourself. Man, we are knocking out the awesome interviews. So you're missing out if you're not joining us on Sundays. Undividedpod.com. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.